We're back in Chumash, but in a very different context. It's a big schlis that we're able to have the last midrasha shir on Chumash of the semester on Sefer Shmot, actually in Yerushalayim. It's great that some of you are here. For the rest of you who will be tuning in later, this is even deeper Torah since it's coming from Yerushalayim. And especially since, and we'll come back to this concept by the end, when we started off Sefer Shmot, so we talked about how Sefer Shmot is Milashon Sham, Milashon there, that it's the book not of leaving, but the book of destination, and the ultimate destination in terms of space at the very least, that we're meant to come to, which all of Chumash is geared at. From the moment that Avraham Avinu is told to go, and the place he's told to go to is Eretz Yisrael, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, literally the whole journey of Chumash when we become a nation, starting from Sefer Shmot, through Vayikra, through Bamidbar, through Devarim, it takes us to the very border of Eretz Yisrael. So in a Torah-oriented, even Zionist sense, so to speak, meaning the whole goal of Torah is to get to Eretz Yisrael, whatever that means, which we'll talk about when we get to Sefer Devarim. But it's beautiful to be able to give over the end of this piece and the end of Sefer Shmot with you in Eretz Yisrael. In the last year, which also only a few of you were at, so we're all catching up, we talked about Parshat Ki Tisa. And we're going to make that last transition from Parshat Ki Tisa to Vayakal Bakudeh and wrap up with a discussion of Vayakal Bakudeh. The transition from the two halves of the Mishkan, and we talked about this when we started off the last section of Shmot, where we talked about how there's the Yitzhak Mitzrayim section, there's the Matan Torah section, and there's the Mishkan section. And we even talked about in different forms in terms of what the flow is from one to the other. But as we come into the Mishkan section, what we have is two parshiot, Truma Tetzaveh, which is the Machshava of the Mishkan. We then have this break of Parshat Ki Tisa with Chayta Egel, which is this break in the Mishkan parshiot. And then we have the last two parshiot, which is the Maaseh of the Mishkan, where it finally comes into fruition. But the process of the Mishkan, going from the Machshava to the Maaseh, for some reason it clearly needs to go through the process of Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel somehow is this meaningful transition that's taking us from the idea, the concept of what the Mishkan is meant to be, and to allow it to actually reach its fulfillment. It's central to what the Mishkan is. So central is it to what the Mishkan is, and we talked about this before, that it actually becomes part of the name of the Mishkan itself. If you open up to the beginning of Parsha Pekudeh, the last Parsha, we've quoted this before, let's see it inside. Perek Lamed Chet, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Parsha Pekudeh opens up. Ele Pekudeh Mishkan, Mishkan Ha'idut. These are the countings of the Mishkan, when they're counting all everything that was brought for the Mishkan in terms of everything that was part of it. Mishkan Ha'idut, the Mishkan of testimony. So what is the Mishkan testifying to? What is it testifying about? So Rashi on the spot, for those of you who have it, which is none of you here, so I'll read you the Rashi. Rashi on those lines, on those words. Eidut li Yisrael, shevitir lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Maaseh HaEgel. That the testimony that the Mishkan is giving is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave them for what they did with the Egel. So it's not just that the Mishkan is coming after the incident with the Egel. Somehow, the Mishkan itself is the resolution, is the conclusion, is the tikkun for what happened with Chet HaEgel. To the extent that it becomes Mishkan HaEidut, a Mishkan which is testifying to the fact that we fixed what happened with Chet HaEgel. How so? So we're going to spend time building and building and building to explain how this is really the fruition, the conclusion of Sefer Shmot, how this brings it all the way to its conclusion, and in light of what we learned about Chet HaEgel. So the first thing we're going to do, I wish I had a board here, but we'll try to do it. We got that circle of the year, which you saw when we did one of the other shirim, but just kind of, we'll go through in the air around the circle of the year, okay? According to Rashi, the concept that the Mishkan is the response for what happened with Chet HaEgel and the resolution of Chet HaEgel is actually embedded into the cycle of the first year in the desert itself. We didn't get a chance to talk about this as much as I would have liked to, and we didn't have enough time to go through it, but at least we'll get to see it here for a moment. That if you break down the cycle of the first year of the Jewish people as a people, it's very interesting when you watch the flow of it, how much of the Jewish year it actually embodies, because it becomes the microcosm for all years and for all Jewish history as a whole, as we've constantly been moving up. Everything we present always has levels above and above and above. So when do we come out of Mitzrayim? Nisan is Yitzias Mitzrayim. Right? So that's where we're going to start. Let's just make an easy starting point. Let's put it here. Okay? That's where we have Nisan. Then we come to, we travel for 49 days, and we get to Sivan and Har Sinai, and we get Matan Torah. Well, we don't just get necessarily the physical Torah. We hear the Dibrot, but that's before Moshe Rabbeinu goes up. Remember, we saw at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, after all of that, he goes up to literally get the Torah, to get the Aseret, to get the Aseret HaDibrot. And all of this that we're presenting is going forward is really based on Shitat Rashi in terms of how the timing actually plays out. So he goes up then at Sivan to go up and receive the Luchot. When does he then come back down 40 days later with the Luchot Rishonot?
Here. No.
When after does he come back down?
40 days.
He goes up and down for 40 days. When does he land? When does he come back down from Har Sinai with the Luchot and then goes and breaks the Luchot? Why does he break the Luchot?
Because he sees
Chet HaEgel. So he comes back down. I mean, that's basically Pshat. He comes back down from Har Sinai on Shvat Asar B'Tammuz and breaks the Luchot and sees Chet HaEgel. It's not necessarily 40 days from there. I mean, 40 days, his experience on the mountain for 40 days clearly concludes at Chet HaEgel, which means that it has to be on Shvat Asar B'Tammuz. That's for sure.
Whoa. It's like a whole masa of Avotzim on the bottom in itself.
There's a lot to go into that, meaning the fact that what we do at Chet HaEgel is, and we talked about how it reaches so much of the deepest chambers of oneself and the deepest chambers of one's Avodat Hashem in terms of distinguishing between one's perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and bowing down to one's perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or serving what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is, which comes back to that selflessness paradigm. But the Gemara actually talks about that there's no... I think it loses the lashon of pranut. There's no negative thing that happens to Klal Yisrael, says Chazal, which doesn't have a little bit of payback, a little bit of a response, a compensation for what we did at Maase HaEgel. Meaning it's what actually travels with us through history, Chet HaEgel specifically. It doesn't say the same thing about Chet HaMeraglim. It specifically states that about Chet HaEgel. That we'll talk about more. And also one of the later Sfarim, the Bamidbar and Devarim, depending, probably, it could be one, it could be both. We may do this year twice. But in Bamidbar and Devarim, we'll talk about the connection between Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim and that actual piece of the Jewish year in any event. So we come back down on Shavuot Arba Tammuz. Now, according to Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up to the mountain two more times. And that's one of the biggest distinctions. He goes back up two more times. The first time to get forgiveness for Klal Yisrael. So he goes up and then comes back down. 40 days later, he comes down on the first of Elul.
And then
he goes back up for another 40 days in order to receive the Luchot Shniot.
And comes down on
Yom Kippur. Meaning that the Luchot Shniot have an essence of Kapara. Mm-hmm. Meaning that's the essence of what's happening there when he comes down on the 10th of Tishrei. The 10th of Tishrei becomes a day of Kapara for all generations because there we achieved the final stage of Kapara for that sin that the largest sin of Jewish history and this transitional moment in the desert. So according to Rashi, he assumes that he goes up three times, which also is nice because then how many days total does Moshe Rabbeinu spend on Har Sinai?
120
days, and one can't help but wonder about then the connectivity between the days of he spends on Har Sinai and the number of years in his life that 120 is so intrinsically linked to Moshe Rabbeinu. So then the next day, what's the first thing he's going to do when he comes back after he gets the Luchot Shniot and gets Kapara? What's going to happen next, even in terms of Chumash itself? We start to put together the Mishkan. Right, and according to the Gra says something amazing, which explains another big question in terms of the cycle of the Jewish year. So he says that he came back down on the 10th, and then on the 11th they started to gather all the materials they would need in order to build the components of the Mishkan. So says the Gra that we gathered all of those things for 5 days. And we start building the individual pieces of the Mishkan, not building the actual Mishkan itself. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to put that up later. But we start building the individual pieces of the Mishkan on the 15th of Tishrei. And that's where it's embedded into the Jewish year with all of the tirutzim that are given in terms of you have to explain why a sukkah is where it is. So the Gra says that that's the link. That we start building, we start Sukkot on the day that we start building the components of the Mishkan. And that only builds more connectivity like we've been talking about where this last segment, we divided Shmon into three parts. It's Yis Mitzrayim, which is going to get Pesach. Matan Torah, which is connected to Shavuos, and even more so, we keep building deeper and deeper connections. We'll keep doing that this year between the Mishkan section of Shemot and the fact that it's connected to Sukkot. Then, when do we? So this is interesting. This is a Chazal. This is a Mamar Chazal. When do we finish completing the construction of the pieces of the Mishkan?
That wasn't Chanukah, right? Like Chafei.
Wildly, Chazal say that it was done on Chafei Kislev. It was finished on Chafei Kislev. And that's where the seeds for Hanukkah are planted as well. When you go through the first year in the desert, everything is there. It's the first year of our Rosh. It's the first... Exactly, meaning at a certain level. But we don't put it up then. We don't put it up then, but the pieces are ready then. And I think it's even brought down that because it didn't go up then, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised that it would get... that it would get paid back later on in history. But those are Hanukkah conversations. But on the 25th of Kislev, that's when they finish building all the parts, but Hashem says to wait. That it needs to sit there through the rest of the winter, and that's concept of what does it mean that things have to sit and kind of hibernate and wait during the course of the entirety of the winter. And then, when does Moshe Rabbeinu actually put up the Mishkan? Excellent. So let's take it back one step before, though. Right, Aleph Nisan of the second year. Yeah. So what happens? We have the 8 days of the Miluim. So the last 7 days of Adar are the days of the Miluim, preparing to put up the Mishkan, and then can look inside. And this is the end of Sefer Shmot. Shmot Perek Mem Pasuk Yud Zayin, the end of Parshat Pekudei. We'll deal with the actual concluding paragraph, but this is certainly all the way toward the end. Vayihi b'chodesh harishon. What's that?
Nisan.
B'shana hashinit.
2449.
Well, it doesn't matter what the year is. Meaning the second year in the desert. Meaning we then finished, we concluded our first year. We've come full circle. B'shana hashinit. Be'echad l'chodesh. The first day of Nisan. Hukama mishkan. The mishkan goes up. And you see how much of the Jewish year is just embedded in that first year in the desert. We also see, by the way, that not only that, but it actually, meaning the conclusion of everything that we built, when does it actually go up? When does the Mishkan actually get built? Is it on the last day of the first year or the first day of the second year? So that comes back even to Inanna that we talked about in Parshat Bo, which we recapped here in the Israel Midrashah, the idea that we go through the cycle of the Jewish year, but we always are going up. We come back to the beginning, but we're reaching higher and higher levels. We're spiraling upward in the Jewish year. And so the 8 days of the Milim actually they conclude inside the beginning of the next year. That there's always a sense of the fact that we're going through the Shana B'Lashon Shinoi. For those who remember from Parshat Bo, or we did it a couple days ago here in the Winter Media Shop, but that's interesting that it goes into it, and that's where things go to the next level. In any event, the actualization of the Mishkan has to go through the most central mistake in Klal Yisrael, and that brings about the Mishkan as a solution, as a resolution. But if the solution is a response, why was it introduced beforehand? How does it come in the middle? What is it trying to teach us? Again, that just only emphasizes our question, but to give context to what's going on here, that it's so clear that Chet HaEgel, that the Mishkan is a response to Chet HaEgel then. Moshe Rabbeinu is going up, he breaks Luchot, he then goes up and gets Kapara, he goes up and comes back specifically with Luchot Shniot. That's when we have full kabar. That's when we're fully done with the process. And then to sort, and then the Mishkan Ha'idu, which testifies that the process of tshuva is over, on Yom Kippur, that the process of tshuva is over, is the building of the Mishkan, basically, which takes you through the rest of the cycle of that year. So the two are really, really, they're clearly very, very closely linked. So we just said it, but we started hinting to it. Let's get into it. What was the mistake in Chet Egel? Let's recap a little bit, since it was a while ago, so we had the Chet Egel shir, the Kitisa shir. What was the mistake of Chet Egel? How did we discuss it? How did we describe it? Let's recap a little bit. What was happening? Even in a sentence.
Prayer.
What?
Moshe wasn't there. And they
not on that text level. In terms of what we talked about is really at the core of, without going literally going through the whole hour shir, right? What was at the core of Chet HaEgel as we presented it? So we said, Eile Elohecha Yisrael. Right? We saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We mistook our perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really was. And we talked about the name Elohim, the name of God that's comprised of two parts, the Eile and the Mi, that there are all of the theses in this world, all the things that we see, the perception that we have. But the perception of a Jew is to be able to get past the Eiles of this world. As we quoted the pasuk from Yeshayahu, Se'u marom einechem, turn your eyes toward the heavens. Se'u marom einechem, ure'u, and see. Mi bara eile. That it's that question mark that stands behind it that created all of these. Mi bara eile. That it's that who, that question mark, that thing that's beyond that created all of these. As opposed to the avodat kochavim mazalot, the Akum, the non-Jew. Who serves those stars? They stop. They look as high as they can go, and they stop at the point that they can no longer see, and so they serve the stars. And we turn our eyes over and we say, "Mi bara ila?" That it's the me. It's that question mark that created these. Mi bara ila. And what happened, as we talked about in Chet HaEgel, is that we assumed that our limited perception of this God of Elohim, this God of Din, was all that there was to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that there was no more to him than that. We limited who God was to our perception of who he was, which in and of itself is Avodah Zarah. When we serve our perception of God, that's Avodah Zarah. Even as we talked about from the Gemara that we quoted, I believe from Yoma, I don't remember where the Gemara was quoted from, but we quoted it in that shir, because I think it's in Sanhedrin, that when we destroyed the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that fiery lion that came out from the Kodesh HaKodashim, that it comes from this deep place, that it can be very close, and that even when we destroyed it, that one hair fell off, which is that hair's breadth, as we suggested, between Avodat Hashem and Avodah Zarah, that stands within the Kodesh HaKodashim. You could be sitting in the Kodesh HaKodashim and not know if you're serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu or serving yourself, or serving Avodah Zarah. It can be that fine. It's very frightening, right? But that's why Avodah Zarah is so relevant today still. And we don't give it enough thought and enough attention. We don't talk about it enough because we don't talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu enough to understand that he's that me, to understand as we grow older a bigger conception of what it means to have a God that's beyond us but relating to us. That he pulls the strings and we can feel his presence in this world but can never understand his essence. But in any event, we limited God to our perception. And because of that, we became detached from the source. We cut ourselves off from the source of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is, that me, that question mark. So what brings about the mistake of Chet HaEgel? Meaning, how do we come to distort Hashem to that which we can see of him? How does that happen? What's the origin of the mistake? What planted the seeds for Klal Yisrael to make this distortion? What actually happened? What made us think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was limited to what we could see of him? Was limited to our perception of him? What happened on a narrative level, on a story level? If you were to look back, what happened that we could make such a mistake, to limit God to what we see of him, to what we imagine we see of him? Okay, but we don't see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's not limiting. I mean, that's the content we poured into it. That we were like, oh, since we already assumed that God was a God of Din, that something must have gone wrong. But that presumes that we already had that conclusion in mind. So where beforehand would we have come to that place where we made that presumption? What incident might have created, frighteningly, that it's that incident would have created a reality, we would have limited a Kadosh Baruch Hu to what we could see of him, what we could perceive of him. What comes right beforehand?
Like the story before?
Yeah, what comes beforehand?
Was it memory of
it? Or you're skipping what you all want to skip. Skipping two full parshiot.
Am I going back?
You're still going backwards. We just never think about it in such a way. Matan Torah. What happens in Matan Torah?
Scary scene.
You have this scary scene. We see this kolot and brakim, and we see all of these things. There's all this crazy stuff going on that's interacting with our senses. And it's very, very possible, and Chazal even hint to this, that the luchot rishonot were, in a sense, part of that problem. The Luchot Rishonot were given in a way that allowed us to perceive a Kadosh Baruch Hu or think that we were actually perceiving a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because the first luchot, in what way, how would you distinguish between the way the first luchot were given, and think about all of the midrashim that you've heard and all of the things that are in the psukim, the way the first luchot are given and the way the second luchot are given. What's the difference between the two? You got to start to categorize it.
It's much more dramatic, the first one.
Much more dramatic. Keep going, use more words. Good.
Awe-inspiring.
Frightening, but like also not.
Like much more hype.
I mean, like we couldn't.
A lot more hype. Well, the words that you're using are words that describe, if you were, they're literally words that describe in our modern day, in our modern times, publicity.
Right.
Right? But what was the, if you were to actually whittle that down, what do you have? They were given publicly. Meaning, the first luchot are given publicly, and this is perhaps the root of the distortion. That because it was done in such a public way, because it was done in such a parhesia way, in such an open way, that in and of itself built in the possibility for distortion, for us to think that we saw something that we didn't really see, to misinterpret what we experienced.
Then how could we be blamed so like heavily for it?
That's a good question. If we go back to the Tisashirim, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us, I'm not limited to what I can see. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu goes and clarifies that in great detail, very finely, before we go into Eretz Yisrael, when he gives his final speech to Bnei Yisrael and Sefer Devarim. When he goes back over Matan Torah, he actually emphasizes us to make sure that we never ever make that mistake again. If you can flip there if you want, I'm going to read the Pasuk, but it's in Devarim, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Tetvav. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, V'nishmartem me'od, be very, very careful, l'nafshoteichem, meaning it seems that your souls are on the line here, right? V'nishmartem, it means to you, but that's a stronger word. V'nishmartem me'od l'nafshoteichem, ki lo ra'item kol tuna b'yom diber Hashem aleichem mechorev mitoch ha'esh. You didn't really see anything. You didn't see any picture of a Kadosh Baruch Hu when a Kadosh Baruch Hu talked to you at Chorev from within the Esh. Moshe Rabbeinu emphasizes that when he repeats the story, because he knows that that was the misconception that we had. And make sure to be very, very careful about that when you review that story in your minds, when you tell it over to your kids. If you were still there, meaning anybody over 20 had already been wiped out by that point. But if you were there as a child, right? We still didn't get to Chet HaMeraglim yet. But if you were under 20 and you were there, so be very, very careful when you go over that story that you didn't really see anything. You didn't see a Tzmanah V'Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's not what happened.
What about like passing through Kriyas Yom Sof and they say like Zaki Li, and then there's some person who say like, oh, they actually saw.
We'll even come back to that. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. That's excellent. And what is, I mean, I think that in one of the Shirim here, somebody talked about that. What does Zeh always imply? Zeh, Zeh, I'm pointing with my finger. We'll come back to that very point. And that's going to be part of the transition. That we're transitioning out of Kriyas Yom Sof, we're transitioning out of Luchot Rishon, we have to transition into Luchot Shniot. But it's all part of the same thing. And the Chazal that we're going to quote toward the end is going to actually bring that very line into that very pasuk into the equation. So you're already ahead of the game. We'll get there. But that's the warning of Parshat Va'etchanan, looking back at the Luchot Rishonot, which isn't to undermine all of the beauty of what Matan Torah was about, and we'll keep that in context as well. But if we want to ask, where were the seeds planted for the possibility for Klal Yisrael, if they wanted to choose to misinterpret, that's where it came from. We're not saying that Matan Torah was this big setup to knock down a straw man. That's not the point. This wasn't a setup for Klal Yisrael to fail. But if we want to see where in there was some sort, knowing already that even though we experienced Matan Torah, and it's crazy that Klal Yisrael would build an egel after Matan Torah, we have to look back and say, if Matan Torah, God said, whatever you do, don't build an idol. And then they go and build an idol. Where in there did something go wrong? Amongst all of the amazing things that went incredibly well, where in there was the little nikuda, the teensy, tiny, small nikuda of something that went wrong, but that could produce chet ha'egel? That those could be, very likely, are the seeds for what happened and what went wrong. The moment you create the possibility to see anything, you create the possibility to think that what you see is what you get, that it's limited to that. The exposure itself is what creates the possibility for us to distort it and think that we actually saw God. In that case, we're then able to reduce God to the Eileh, Eileh Elohecha Yisrael. We're able to reduce God to the Eileh, to the limited perception that we have of Him. If that's true, And then the goal of building the Mishkan is this Mishkan Ha'idut, that everything has finally come to its conclusion in terms of creating the relationship of the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're meant to have. Where do we see that full resolution? Where do we see the full response to the improper perception by Chet HaEgel? So now, almost sadly, like it's exciting to move into Sefer Vayikra, but it's sad that we're concluding Sefer Shemot. Let's actually go to the final paragraph of Sefer Shemot. Okay? The final paragraph of Sefer Shemot. Which in the same way that we look to the Rosh of the Sefer, where everything's starting from, this is the goal, this is the destination, this is the culmination of the Sefer, of what it's about. Perek Mem Pasuk Lamedal, the last paragraph. Now when we go through this, think about it critically and listen here to the words and think about what words keep coming up. The cloud covered up Ol Moed, and the kavod of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Moshe wasn't able to go into Ol Moed. Why? Because the cloud was upon it. And the kavod of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Uvehalot ha'anan al ha'mishmeal ha'mishkan, when the anan, when the cloud would go up from the Mishkan, Yisu b'nei Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem, and they would travel on all of their journeys. V'im lo ya'aleh ha'anan, if the cloud would not come up, v'lo yisu ad yom he'aloto, then they wouldn't go until it would go up. Why? Ki anan Hashem al ha'mishkan, because the cloud was on the Mishkan yomam during the day, v'ish te'elai labo, and the fire was in front, was by it by night, le'enei kol beit Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem, in the eyes of all of Beit Yisrael and all of their journeys. Before that, before we get there, what keeps coming up in this paragraph? This paragraph, without anything that we've put in beforehand, looking at that paragraph, what words keep coming up? So Mishkan, of course, because the goal was to get to the conclusion of the Mishkan. So we'll definitely have to deal with the Mishkan for sure. What new words? What new terms? What new phrases are coming up? Kvod Hashem and Anan. Those are very clearly the emphasis of this paragraph. That there's this Anan, this concept of this cloud that's coming over the Mishkan, and someone bringing about Kvod Hashem, which we'll define. What is an Anan? Why this emphasis on Anan? What does an Anan do? Very literally, what is the Anan doing? What is it functioning as?
Our protection.
What?
Our protection. Our guide to leap. And
well, where else did we see an Anan? On a pshat level, also all the way, not by us, but all the way at the top of our Sinai. There wasn't protecting anything. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What is an Anan, what is the Anan doing? When the Anan comes down, what happens?
The
Shekhinah is there. Can we see the Shekhinah?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Because the Anan is covering it up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The Anan is used to cover things. That's what the Anan's functioning as. Step one. Let's pull it up a little bit more. The Anan here is being linked to another phrase. What was the other phrase? Kvod Hashem, which shouldn't be surprising to us, because how do we actually refer to Ananim in Chumash in many places? Ananei HaKavod. The concept of Ananim and Kavod being linked to one another is actually in the Pesukim. The Ananim that take us forward, the Ananim that guide us through the desert are called the Ananei HaKavod. Those two concepts are intrinsically linked from this very moment on. And then again, it was the second time, in the middle of Pasuk Lamed Hey, Ki Shachan Alav He'anan Ukvod Hashem Aleihet HaMishkan. These two being totally linked.
Can we define Kvod Hashem?
Absolutely. We will. I'm intentionally. That was the only word I didn't translate when we read the Pesukim, because we're going to build to it. We have to define what Kavod is.
I mean, because if it's Kavod and like you can actually feel like him.
No. That's not necessarily what Kavod means. Meaning you're right and wrong at the same time. But we'll get there in a second. Before we jump to Elisa's point, there's one other time where it's very subtle, but where there's an emphasis on Kavod in the context of the Mishkan. because we didn't have enough chavruta time in the Chumash segment, so we might not be familiar with it.
Enough chavruta time.
But last year we had one chavruta per parsha because we had the whole year for Bereishit. But then what happened? We ran out of time. So thank God we shortened it this time because we were two shiurim over anyway. But I did encourage everybody to read the parsha before each time. That was in my head making up for the chavruta time. I don't know if it accomplished anything, but in my head that was what I was doing. So if you actually go back to Parshat Tzaveh, unbelievably, take a look at this. Perek Chafchet, Pasuk Aleph. Yeah, sorry. Perek Chafchet, Pasuk Aleph. I receive Atah Krev. Went to Tzaveh, right? Okay. You got it? You good? Okay. The Atah. Yeah, the two sides of the thing are confusing. V'yata t'akrevi lecha et Aaron achicha. You could just look on with her, it's fine. V'yata t'akrevi lecha et Aaron achicha. V'et banav itom mitoch b'nei Yisrael l'chan. Only we choose Aaron and his children to be the Kohanim. Nadav avihu elazar v'itamar b'nei Aaron. V'asita v'gdei kodesh l'Aaron achicha. You should make clothing, special, unique clothing for Aaron and his... Aaron, your brother, I mean, he's talking to Moshe, Aaron, your brother, why? What did those clothing function as? L'chavod u'letifaret. The begadim of the Kohanim are considered to also be within the realm of kavod. Now, certainly on the surface level, what's the obvious connection between ananim and kavod then? Between ananim and begadim?
They're covering.
They're both covering up. They both cover up. That's definitely the simple understanding, which we also have to explain the meaning behind. But the begadim obviously cover things up, and the ananim we see keep covering up these things. They're both, their function is just to cover up. But they don't just cover up. Think about it for a second. When a person puts on clothing in the morning, when something is covered up, when something is being hidden, when something is being covered over, what else does it tell you? Does it just tell you that it's covered up? What else does it do? How else does it function? What?
I mean, like, kavod. Like, you have respect for your body.
Before, again, you keep jumping three steps ahead, which is great. It's excellent. Avirash always is so machkim. But taking it even one step beforehand, what it does is it actually also, it does two opposite things. It covers up, but it also reveals. Covering something up functions in two ways. It covers up, and it reveals. Right? When I put on begadim, when I put on clothing in the morning, I cover myself up in a way that I can then go out and interact with the outside world and expose myself to the outside world. Taking it even deeper where you're already heading, I think, is that what's happening with when you're covering something up, what's happening with begadim, what's happening with the anan, when you cover something up, you're doing two things. On the one hand, yes, you're covering it up. But you're covering it up to say that there is something so precious and so meaningful here that it needs to be covered up. But by covering it up and saying, you can't see it because there's something so precious and so meaningful in here, you're betraying the fact that really there is something very precious and meaningful in here. I mean, you're unintentionally, you're not defining what it is. You're not defining the nature of the content of that thing, but you are defining that something very special, very unique, very important is happening inside of that which I can't see. Or else I would allow it to be exposed. So coming back to what you immediately did, which is amazing, right? That's the way we're thinking in these Chumash Shirim. Come back to the definition of the word kavod. So what word did you relate kavod to?
Kaved.
What does kaved actually mean?
Heavy.
So it means heavy. So you wanted to really use it in this... as literal definition as possible. But kaved means heavy, or has weight, or has significance, right? When something has kavod, it means that it has weight to it, it has content to it, it has meaning to it. That's what something which is kavod is. It's kavod because, as you pointed out, it is kaved. When a matter is deep and serious in Chazal, something which really needs proper thought and attention, a person needs to come into that concept, needs to come into those ideas with, what's the term that we use? coming into something seriously, coming, recognizing that there's weight to what we're about to discuss. COVID. Rosh. You familiar with the concept of COVID Rosh? Maybe not. We use in Lashon HaKodesh, we use the concept of COVID Rosh means to come into something with a sense of seriousness about that thing. Why? Because that concept is kaved. It doesn't mean kaved literally, that the idea is so heavy that if you don't like steal yourself up, you're going to hit the ground if it hits you in the head. Meaning what it means is that you're stealing yourself up for the sense that, like, this is a very weighty matter, I need to give it my full attention. As opposed to something on the flip side, which is cheap, lacks intrinsic meaning, isn't really significant, isn't really that meaningful, then we can come into it with what? Kalut Rosh, the opposite side. Or if it's not resonating, Kalus Rosh, is that helping? Okay. Right? Kalut Rosh, when you come into it with a lighter head, meaning you don't need to put all of your focus there, you don't need to, because there's nothing significant that's really happening here.
So how does that play into Chesed?
Have I ever not gotten us to the end point? We'll get there. We're building. Yeah.
Could that anan also link to, like, when we say sorry, mean it had an anan over time?
It has to. Now you're all jumping. It's great. Baruch Hashem, you all have all internalized this dream so well that meaning the end is somewhat anticlimactic, because we've been very intentionally planting and sowing and tending to the seeds to let them grow over the course of the Sefer, that you're all immediately jumping to the obvious conclusions. But they're only obvious because Baruch Hashem, as a group together, we've built it up. So we're getting there. But you're all headed in the right direction. But let's give the concept of Kavod, and Ananea Kavod, and all these things, let's give it the Kavod Rosh that it deserves first, and then we'll jump to where you guys have already jumped to ahead. I know where we are. Kavod means that the more you sense that a thing has so much more depth, it is when you sense something that a thing has so much more depth than you can see on the outside. That the outside is just a cover for the tremendous depth that lies within. So just because, again, I think it would be wrong to not at least touch on this from purely a Torah point of view, a Pasuk point of view, a conceptual point of view. It just, to me, it's like when we hear all of these, and all of these shirim that emphasize the importance, tzniut, 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 tzniut. Right? And there's never any context given. And then we quote one random pasuk as though it's supposed to answer all questions. It is supposed to answer all questions, but you need to actually think about the pasuk. What's the pasuk that's the source very often for tzniut, particularly as it relates to women? Oh, this is a freebie.
It's a little hint.
Perek tilim pasuk perek memhei pasuk yedalin.
Oh,
kol kvoda. Bat Melech Penima. Amazing how that pasuk, meaning that pasuk is always quoted, always stay internal. Don't go outside. Don't. It's like this sense of, like, this pasuk is telling you you should be trapped, because all we know how to, the only word in that pasuk that we know how to competently define is panim. Just stay inside. I don't know what the rest of it's talking about. Just stay inside. Don't show yourself. That's all that gets screamed from the rooftops. It's saying so much more than that. It's David Melech. It's Tehillim. Kol kvoda pat melech penima. Meaning, of course, the idea of kavod is all about the fact that there's so much weight, there's so much intrinsic essence, there's so much depth to the concept of a bat melech, which all of you are. I don't get to be a bat melech, right? All of you are a bat melech. You're the daughters of the king. And therefore, that's meant to be covered up, in the sense that by covering it up, it shows the world just how deep and precious and amazing is what's inside every single one of you. That's the idea of kavod. Taking it away from the realm of tzniut, the way we classically define it for a moment. Even just think in terms of how the world functions. Can you imagine? Take even, we'll keep classic hierarchical structures, right? A male king walks out. We'll switch it to men, right? Can you imagine if, when giving an address to his people, a king were to walk out and open up, or you want to even bring it down to modern terms? Can you imagine if the president of the United States, right? The president of the United States walks out and he came to give the State of the Union. And what does he come out in? Basketball shorts, a t-shirt, and a backwards baseball cap. Think that would go over well or not well?
That's well.
He would be a joke. We'd laugh about it. We treat him with kalut rosh. He's not taking himself seriously, and we're not taking him seriously. When he walks out in his finest suit, when a king, when you see real regality, a president does not, doesn't have this real regality to him. A real king from back in the day who had power in the sense of what a king was about, they would walk out in robes upon robes upon robes with this drape over them going back and a crown on their head. What's with all the fanfare? It's so public, right? We use the word, what was the word that you used, not fanfare?
Hype.
He comes out with all this hype, right? Modern day word instead of fanfare or drama, which is what you use, right? Comes out with all of this stuff on him. Why? Because every single layer of precious clothing that he puts on top of himself emphasizes one more time and one more time and one more time just the tremendous amount of kavod that he deserves. And is required to be given to him because there's so much going on inside of there. Who else of all of the Jewish people is chosen, selected out and selected out and selected out, even in the context of modern day Jewish people, but certainly in the Midbar, who keeps getting selected out to be at the top of the food chain, to be the highest level of kavod, deserving of the highest level of kavod in terms of the hierarchical structure in the desert? The Kohanim, and of them the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohanim have special clothing that the Torah has to define how they are supposed to cover themselves up. And after we do that, what do? We have to go further than that. We then have to define, well, for the person one step further every time. We then have to define what's the extra begadim that belong to whom? The Kohen Gadol, because he has even more kavod. Who, as you just pointed out, the only person who's allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Which we'll come back to. But that's what it's about. And it's true, and again, using the example of a king and using the example of a president, I just empathize with the fact it's for both men and women. It's something which is so often misconstrued, and because it makes me feel terrible that it's only battered into the heads of women. First of all, often from the wrong, not without context. And second of all, it's not a women's thing. It's both women and men. It's both women and men. If you open at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, so fine, it's not Siman Aleph. It's Siman Bet. If you make it all the way to Siman Bet of Shulchan Aruch, it talks about in what ways, how do you get dressed? How do you recognize that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that all of the whole basis for Siman Bet is about how you get dressed in the morning and to make sure that you never expose yourself. And what does the Mishnah Berurah keep emphasizing there? I didn't even look it up beforehand, but I've learned it enough times. It's in there. It's in the Mishnah Berurah over there. What does he keep emphasizing? Why do you want to be able to be careful about how you get dressed in the morning? Mm-hmm. What phrase of Kavod does he use? Because of course he's going to relate back to a phrase of Kavod. Milo kol ha'aretz kivodo, but bring back kavod into that context. And I remember one time I'll tell you one quick story, and then we'll finish bringing the piece home. But just to show again, like it's meant to be throughout. It was an amazing thing to me. I was in a summer camp 1 month, and I was on chinuch staff, and we got like one. I think it was like 1 day off a week, something like that. So Shoshana and I were in our Shana Rishona. And when we had these days off, so very often we would take bikes out from the shed because, like, the camp would—they'd be off. They always give the day off was the day that, like, the campus, the campers were off campus, like at a trip or whatever it was. So especially if there was nobody around, so we'd go and we'd take bikes and we'd bike up. And this is by in Pennsylvania, right? So you'd go and you'd take bikes, and there was a path to go. We'd bike from there to the—I forget the name of the store now. I'm sure any of you who've been to these camps would know that the ice cream store on the corner of that block. We'd get the chocolate-covered bananas. We'd cheat a little bit. We'd have the chocolate-covered bananas. We also weren't as into it then as we are now. But we'd get the chocolate-covered bananas there. And we'd go and we'd bike there. And it was nice. It was to get out a little bit, to enjoy the sun, to get a little bit of exercise, and to just have a good time. Just go on and have a good time. And there was a group of girls from Israel who were on Shirut Leumi. Interesting chevra of girls. Some of whom even sat down with me. They actually came to me when they heard this shirim that I was giving on Dvarim. I was doing Dvarim shirim then, and this was quite a few years ago. And they said, like, there are so many fundamental concepts that you're talking about. We've been religious our whole life because we grew up religious, but we don't understand why. And they actually, it was so crazy to me that Benos Eretz Yisrael were asking a stupid young Chutz La'aretz guy to come and sit down and learn with them the fundamentals of what Judaism was really about. So I was learning with these girls, also had a kesher with them. So a group of them came out from around the bend, and they came from a different way, and we actually met at an intersection. And we were talking for a minute, and then one of them stopped, and she looked at me, and she was like, I don't understand. It's the middle of the summer. You're on a bike, and you're a guy. Why are you wearing the button-down shirt and black slacks that you always wear? But she, like, asked me the question straight out. She's like, what's wrong with you? And I didn't mean it in any level as a way of musar. It was just, she asked me a question, I gave her an answer. I said, it doesn't matter where I am. If Malo Kol Ha'aretz Kvodo, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in this world, this is how I feel it's appropriate to dress, standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's in this world. So just because I'm a man doesn't mean that I don't have a requirement of tzniut. Doesn't mean I have a requirement to think about what I dress and how I present myself and keep in mind what's in front of me at all times. So yeah, it's a little bit hot. Okay, so you suffer and I suffer. It's fine, but that's the idea, meaning is that we're supposed to be able to recognize what it is that we're doing in this world. And you just watch, like, mind blown. Like, it's been so beaten into her head that it was just this oppressive thing for women. It was just so sad to me that's how it came down. But that it's something which men and women, all Jews are meant to, because even though you're the Benos Melech, first of all, the concept of us being about Melech, which we'll come to, is for all of Klal Yisrael. And second of all, so I'm a Ben Melech. But I have just as much of a chiyuv to walk around with a level of regality, not gava, not ego, but a level of regality that I feel is appropriate for being a Ben Melech in this world and representing a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world, coming back into the Boshirim, that we are the moon and reflecting the glory of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in reality. That's what kavod. That's what kavod means. That by covering up, I show. When you see somebody walk out, like when you see somebody walk out, and when you think that the Sephardic chief rabbi in Israel, you think that he gets hana from walking out in all of those crazy robes, in the whole getup and the headdress and everything. He's representing the light of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world, and so he dresses with kavod. And there are many stories, I don't know of which ones, I don't remember, of like some of them even just to re-emphasize for themselves, like they'd have these like fancy shoes and all these things, where they would even take out the soles of the shoes to make sure that they were still walking on the ground, to make sure that they still felt the fact that, meaning it was all externally just to show that the Torah is significant, but they themselves knew that they're just B'nai Adam, that they're just, that they're only, that, you know, that who they are and what, they would keep that perspective. They would do things underneath the clothing to keep perspective for themselves that they weren't important, they were just representing something which deserves kavod, which is an unbelievable thing. But there are definitely stories out there of those gedolim who would actually remove the soles of their shoes, so they wouldn't even feel that comfort when they were walking that would come from the fancy shoes that they had to wear. Because in any event, Adkan, the tangent, but the tangent that gives the content for where we're going. Now we can see how the Mishkan becomes a tikkun for what Chet HaEgel is about. We go through the process of Chet HaEgel and we recognize that our perception of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is. And that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is so much more beyond the details of what we can see. And then we go and we build this Mishkan Ha'idut, that's a testimony to the fact that we've understood what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is and what he's not. That he's not the Eile, that he's Elokim, that he's the me that stands behind the Eile. So then what happens when we finally build the Mishkan where a Kadosh Baruch Hu shows us that we've completed our understanding of what it means to have a proper relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu? So we have a Mishkan, but the cloud comes and covers it up. Meaning, we know that there's something inside. We even understand it to a certain extent. But while, what do we see? What's the Eila that we see? The Eila that we now see is the Ananim, which indicate to us that there's a me that's so much more beyond my understanding inside. In this very structure itself, which is designed in a way of tzniut and kavod. How is it designed? We've talked about this so many times, and this piece we keep coming back to because it's the conclusion of the Sefer. But we have an Azara, and we have a Kodesh, and we have a Kodesh HaKodeshim, meaning the very structure itself is built with layers within layers within layers, chambers within chambers within chambers, getting deeper and deeper and deeper inside, where each one is covering up the other one. To the point we have the Parochet, which is covering up the Kodesh HaKodeshim. We make sure that every single stage, there's no open doorways. Every single stage is covering up the next stage, covering up the next stage, covering up the next stage. Very careful. Who is it that's going where and when? Who is allowed to go deeper inside? To what extent can we go deeper inside? Because we maintain the reality of kavod. The Anan brings about that reality of kavod and the recognition that that's what our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is meant to be about. Let's add one last Ma'amar Chazal, and with this we'll pull all of the pieces together to really conclude. I spent around an hour last night trying to find the source for this chazal that my Rebbe kept on quoting. There were a couple of different variations that I was able to find, and it was hard to find it without having. I mean, on Bar Ilan you could search, but you need the actual words. You can't can you find for me the concept of? Like, it doesn't work like that, right? Yeah, we don't have right. There's no. Their search function is not like Google yet. There's no Siri for Bar Ilan yet. I found a couple of different variations on this midrash, but none of them were exactly the way that my Rebbe expressed it. So I'm wondering if there's another variation, or if he was translating it into what it meant, quote unquote. I'm not sure. I can't answer that question personally because I didn't get a chance to ask him. But I want to share with you the way the Midrash stands as it's presented here. I have two different ones, I picked two of them to bring out, but two different ones. One of them is meaning a Yalkut means to gather in, so it's a gathering of Midrashim. But one is found in the Yalkut Shimoni on Parsha Truma, unsurprisingly, Shin Samechei. Another one, you could take a look at them, you know, inside for yourself afterward. Another one is in Shir Hashirim Rabbah, unsurprisingly, because as we talked about, Shir Hashirim is the guiding force behind Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you'll see especially what in terms of what the Midrash here is emphasizing. Shir Hashirim Rabbah, Parsha Gimel, and then Aleph within Parsha Gimel. The Midrash expresses the following. What was the transition that's taking place between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah and then to the Mishkan? And the way that my Rebbe then reframes it, again, I'm not sure if there's a separate Midrash that actually says this explicitly. He says that he either felt or says that this Midrash is saying, what was the mistake that happened beforehand where things had to change in order for us to be able to actually come to a conclusion of Sefer Shmot? So it gives a mashal. Mashal lemelech. To a king. Back to Melech and Bat Melech. Right? Mashal lemelech shaita lo bat ktana. He had a small daughter. And she was still very young. Haya ro'elta bashuk. He would see her, you know, walking around in the shuk. Medaberima. Bimavot medaberima. He would talk to her wherever she was outside. Kivan shehigdila. But once she got older, once she became moved from being a child, from a girl to a woman, Ein kvoda shel biti sheye medaberima befarhesia. It's not proper for me to talk to her in public anymore. Ela asuli aflion sheye medaberima. Rather, make for me an enclosed space that I can talk to her. What is the nimshal? So he goes through, you'd see us, but I'll actually read from you because you brought up the very concept. I'm now switching Midrashim, but the two again using basically the same language. I'll go back to get to your pasuk. I didn't underline it because I thought it would be clear, but since you went there, you deserve it. B'mitzrayim ra'u oto b'farhesya. In Mitzrayim, we saw Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is the Mishal, we saw Kadosh Baruch Hu b'farhesya sh'ne'emar, v'avar Hashem l'ingof et Mitzrayim. That the Kadosh Baruch Hu came and he went and destroyed Mitzrayim. Bayam ra'u oto. At the Yam we saw him, and what did we say? Zekei livan ve'u. He quotes that pasuk in the terms of the sense of bifarhesia, that we're living in a reality of bifarhesia with the Kadosh Baruch Hu even more than Matan Torah. This Midrash is actually bringing it much, much deeper than that. That it wasn't even just that mistake in Matan Torah. Bisinai ra'u oto panim bifanim shne'emar vayomer Hashem misinai. We see him. Vayomer Hashem misinai ba v'gomer, that we see him at Har Sinai. Now, Gemara said that this is where he sees it as where did it break down and then have to be fixed, which definitely fits into Chet Egel, and I wonder if he translated it that way. But in terms of the Midrash takes a much more upbeat stance in terms of just the transition. But if there was a tradition, what caused the transition in our Parshiot? Kitisa. So I understand where he's coming from, even if he just understood it from this Midrash, as meaning then Kitisa showed that that was no longer the appropriate level of relationship to have with Klal Yisrael. And so things had to change. But the Midrash continues as follows. Kevan she'amdu Yisrael al Har Sinai. When Yisrael came to Har Sinai, v'kiblu et ha-Torah, and they received the Torah, v'amru, kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. Everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu did, na'aseh v'nishma, we're going to do and we're going to hear. Na'aseh lo umat shlema. We became a complete nation. Meaning, we grew up. We reached maturity. We matured as a nation. And at that point, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ein shivchan shel bnei Yisrael she'im edaber imam b'farhesia. It's no longer appropriate for me to go and talk to Klal Yisrael out in the streets. If you want to build it back into the pivotal shir that we said was kind of at the center of Sefer Shmot, the emunah, the shir we talked about emunah and the whole flow of Sefer Shmot, what did we talk about the whole beginning of Sefer Shmot was about? You even heard the shir twice in the last week.
Like the reproduction? Like,
no, even on a, we talked about the mashal that we gave.
Dating,
engagement, marriage, right? So what happens when you date? Where do you date?
In public.
So again, I'm translating it a little bit, but I think it's very much relating to all of the concepts that we've been putting forward. Where do you date? You date publicly. You have to date publicly. It's usur to be in yichud when you're dating. It's problematic to be in yichud when you're dating. You're not meant to have that level of a relationship. So we go, and like we talked about in that shiur, God catches our eye, like he's talking about it in Mitzrayim. And then we go and we move even from just seeing God. Then what do we go to? We point to God. Zeh keli van veyo, the Midrash says. And as you learned in one of those other shiurim, zeh often indicates us pointing to. So we move from seeing a Kadosh Baruch Hu to when our relationship deepens at Kriyat Yam Suf, which we define in that shiur as the moment of our engagement. And what do we do at an engagement? What are we saying? We're saying, we're not married yet, but I choose you. And we, ki'ilu, put a finger out and say, I choose you. We're not married yet, but zeke livan veyu, we choose, this is what I'm dedicating myself to. We're not there yet, we're on the way, it's still in public, I'm putting it on your finger, we're going to have an engagement party, it's going to be all crazy. It's very public. Now with Facebook, I don't know, there's a moment that's private, which is a problem in and of itself. It's very much the destruction of kavod in this world in our day and age. We say zeke livan veyu, then listen to the words of the Midrash. Then we come to Matan Torah. And what happens? What's the lashon that it uses there? Read it again. B'sinai ra'ulto ban panim b'fanim. In that engagement period, you're drawn closer, very dangerously, but you're drawn closer and closer and closer during that engagement until you finally come to the chuppah, where you're finally able to stand there, even though it's still public. You have the chuppah surrounding you with no walls, but you have the chuppah surrounding you where only you're underneath that chuppah. And you're able to look at that person in that halavai. That's the first time the faces should ever get so close to each other. Right? But that's when you're supposed to be, for the first time, really panim b'panim. But at that point, the relationship changes. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why we need the Mishkan as the end of Sefer Shemot, as we emphasize in that year and many other shirim. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ein shivchan shel banai. It's not proper. It's not praise with me for my children. She'yem edaber imam b'farhes. I'm not going to talk to them publicly anymore. After the chuppah, there's no chasen and kala standing there so obviously, just looking at each other so lovingly and so deeply and so connected to each other. It's not meant to be that way. When we see two people who are so lovingly gazing at each other, and lo alinu, in our day and age, when they're also, we have public space affection, all these things, what's the first thing we think in our mind? What's the modern day phrase that we actually use? Go get a room. But we have an inherent sense of that. This doesn't belong in the public sphere. This doesn't belong here. I don't want to see this. We feel uncomfortable with it because it's not meant for my eyes, and we have an intrinsic sense that this is not me, this is not for me. And we tell them, go somewhere else. This is not where it's meant to be. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now that we're married, now that we had our Sinai, the whole world shook. In case anybody didn't catch it, I picked up a mountain and I held a mountain over your head. This is a chuppah, and the whole world watched as we got married. Amazing. Biggest wedding in the history of the world. Unbelievable. But now things get real. Ela ya'aseli mishkan. Make for me a mishkan. V'ka'sha'ani tzarich l'daber imahem. Am I need to talk to them? Yeah, m'daber imahem mitoch ha'mishkan. I'll talk to them from within the mishkan. The public side is over. The public side is great, and it's the safe space when there's the dating stage going on, when we're meeting a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when we're going through Kriyas Yam Suf, when we're going through Matan Torah. But there needs to be a recognition, and that's why this is the transition point. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, meaning Kilu, we come out of our Sinai, we come out of Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, go and build a Mishkan. But we don't yet understand, what does it mean to build a Mishkan? Why do we need to build a Mishkan? And we haven't actually been able to uproot that level of Avodah Zarah inside of us. Even though we came to the chuppah, we didn't know what it meant. Even though husband and wife, very often they come to a chuppah after they get married, not that marriage is negative, but the first year of marriage and marriage itself has challenges. My Rebbe didn't say this, but to me it's so clearly emanating and also such a big and important musar for later on in life. For you all, I've done the marriage thing already. But a big musar for later on in life. What happens is that both people still then walk into the marriage based on their knowledge of the other person. But what does that knowledge of the person come from? Where did they take in all of that information about the other person up until this point?
In
only in the public sphere. Only the outside. On all levels. In a proper dating relationship, they shouldn't be penetrating emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, and certainly physically on any level. They shouldn't be getting into that person's Kodesh HaKodeshim. We talked about that way back in Parsha Truma as a group together. That there should always be lines, that nobody should be entering into one's Kodesh HaKodeshim until you know for sure 100% it's the one. Because you can't take that back. In terms of every level of being. And that point, we didn't understand. And so in marriage, a lot of what the friction comes in is like, this is not what I expected. This is not what I thought it was going to be like. And not always in a negative way. I mean, people don't have to fight through it. Shana and I talked through a lot of it. We didn't fight through almost any of it. Baruch Hashem, which... I didn't mean to put myself up on a pedestal. I'm saying, Baruch Hashem, we had the tools to be, and we worked to gain the tools while we were engaged to be able to talk things out. And there were definitely things where, you know, and I'm not saying this about Shoshana, but, you know, people kid around all the time that, like, the person you date and you get engaged to is not the person you marry. Right? That's also in a very beautiful way. It's saying that you haven't really penetrated the inner depth of what that person is about. And that's okay. And there needs to be. It doesn't necessarily have to go as badly as it went in Parshat Ki Tisa. It doesn't have to go as bad as it went in Parshat Ki Tisa. But there's struggle there, and when we finally have to come to terms and figure out how do we relate to each other properly now that we're in a more in the proper context. And in fact, I suspect, and Rebbe didn't say this either, he brings it up in another context, but I strongly suspect that Kitisa gives us the worst possible case scenario in terms of the Torah giving us hadracha on how to deal with any situation. If you actually go in, and I want to add this last piece in, and then we'll come to the conclusion of Sefer Shmos. I want to add this one last piece in. Maybe hinted to it, but I think it needs to be kind of brought out in such a deeper and more beautiful way. What is Kitisa trying to teach us? Then we come to we make the mistake in Kitisa. We make the mistake of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the outside and not the inside. Right? We make the mistake of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of his outer appearance. What is this? His panim instead of his panim. And that's the interplay, to always be careful which side are you always relating on, the panim or the panim. And if you actually go, and we didn't have the time to do this in Kitisa, the concept of panim is like, comes up endless number of times in Parshat Kitisa. If you go back and reread Kitisa on the level of panim, and the question of panim and panai, and all of the variations of panim, you can see a whole different Parshat Kitisa. Let's add a little bit of content to that without giving a whole different share on Parshat Kitisa. Is that after Chet HaEgel, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to get forgiveness for Klal Yisrael, receives forgiveness for Klal Yisrael, then there's this whole amazing, and I would even use the word just Kabbalistic or mystical, whatever word you want to use. I mean, I don't know how anybody can even pretend that there's like only a pshat here. This interaction between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. We're like, Moshe Rabbeinu is like, you know what? This is a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is open to things. Let's just go for it. And he has to see his face. He's only able to back. And I don't know how you understand face and back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially if we're moving away from physical manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Without it, there's clearly things that are happening underneath the surface the pshat is not going to be able to produce. But going to that, I want you to actually open up to these psukim. Shmot Perek Lamed Gimel. Pasuk Yud Bet. Are you guys still with me to go for another 5-10 minutes? Okay. Vayomer Moshe al Hashem. Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Re'a ta omer ilai, ha'alat amazeh ve'ata lo hodatani et asher tishlach imin. Ve'ata amarta yadaticha b'shem ve'gam yatzatichen b'einecha. I found favor in your eyes, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Hodi'ini nat drachecha, show me your ways. And again, that's a whole different conversation about, again, the front and the back, and that goes on later in the conversation. Hodi'ini nat drachecha, leman emsachin be'inecha, ure'ei ki amcha hagoy hazeh. And you'll see that this nation is your people. Vayomer elav. Moshe Rabbeinu then says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im ein panecha holchim al ta'alinu mizeh. If your face doesn't come with us, don't bother bringing us out. What is he referring to? He's actually referring to, Rashi brings this down, Pesukim that came earlier, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu implies that a malach will guide them from this point forward, and not Hashem himself. It says, Vayomer panai ilechu, this is Rashi on panai ilechu, kitargumo, lo eshlach od malach. Rashi brings it in to make sure it was clear. Don't send a malach in front of me. Ani ba'atzmi ilech. I want you to come as yourself. And what's the response? Sorry, did I skip a pasuk? I skipped pasuk yedalad. Meaning, sorry, I skipped a pasuk. Pasuk yedalad. Going back for a second. Vayomer panai yelichav anichotilach. He says, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us this fine. My face will go with you. My panim, on the other side of it, will go with you. And then Moshe Rabbeinu responds and says, fine, it's a good thing that your panim are coming with me, because if they don't, there's no point in us going forward. Meaning the panim, don't send the malach to guide me. Don't send the malach to take me. I want you to come with us. And unless you're here with us in the journey of history, unless you're here with us intimately in the journey of history, there's no point in going forward. How else will we know that we found favor in your eyes? Aniva amcha, myself and my nation, meaning, how will we know? Who's we here? B'nei Yisrael know that we've truly found favor in your eyes. Again, enecha, re'e, panim, all of those words are like key words for all of Sefer Kitisa, all of Parsha Kitisa. Halo bilechtecha imenu, if you walk with us. And that's significant because v'niflinu ani ve'amcha michol ha'am asher al panei ha'adamah. And you separate out us from all other nations on the earth. Meaning, unless you're there with us, unless you create a reality with us where we're living a reality of intimacy, of closeness, a relationship of what Har Sinai was meant to produce, where we act, where us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are a husband and a wife, unless you're coming with me, there's no point in going forward. This is totally me superimposing what I understood from thinking about this last night for a long time, till I felt comfortable that I think this is what it's portraying. I think what Kitisa is portraying is that when that relationship breaks down, when there's a recognition, and it could break down in many different ways, and hopefully it doesn't get as bad as Kitisa, and there's no reason to assume it gets as bad as Kitisa, but Kitisa gives us the worst case scenario, I think. When the two people who entered into that marriage didn't understand what they were getting into, and both came in, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that way, but certainly from Klal Yisrael's side. We came in with certain presumptions of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was based on our limited perception. And we expected an interaction with the God that was the God that we assumed that he would be. And then suddenly things were different. And that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. And that's not how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to respond to him. And things broke down. There's a worst case scenario, lo aleinu, lo aleinu. What's the worst case scenario in a marriage?
End it.
Divorce. What does the Kaddish Baruch Hu say? With the Kaddish Baruch Hu, it gets worse than divorce. What's the Kaddish Baruch Hu, what does it mean when the Kaddish Baruch Hu divorces his people? What does the Kaddish Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to do at Chet HaEgel? He says, I'll wipe you out and I'll start with you again. We'll start from scratch. We'll start again. New marriage, new relationship, start from scratch. Moshe Rabbeinu says that's not, and I think that the Kaddish Baruch Hu is pushing Moshe Rabbeinu to bring this out. That's not the way that we handle things. That's not the way that we go about it. A relationship requires the work and the effort to move from the exposed place to the private place and to get to know that person and to work to bind yourself closer and closer to that person for who they are. Despite the fact that they may be somewhat different than you imagine them when you only know them in the public sphere, which is inevitable because you don't really know who you... Halavai, you don't know who they are before you marry them, so to speak. You know that certain things are in place, that the marriage is going to work, but you shouldn't know their innermost chambers. And so you don't know everything about them, and things are going to end up being different. And that should be, we look at it in the secular world as being a negative. That's not the person who I married. We say, Baruch Hashem, I didn't realize how much depth this person had. And I have so much more to learn, and there's struggle in figuring out how to reorient myself to live with that person in a way where it makes sense. So the worst case scenario is divorce. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no way, that's not going to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fine. What's the second option? Which is honestly, says Moshe Rabbeinu, just as bad. What is Moshe Rabbeinu struggling with the Kaddish Baruch Hu here? What are the two options in front of him? What's this dialogue that we just read all about? Literally, what are the two options?
Either like
the
next
offer. No. The conversation we just read.
The malach.
So God says, fine, a malach will guide you. He'll tell you what I'm looking for. He'll guide you, and you go on your way, and you do what you're supposed to do, and I'll be somewhere there in the background. See, fine, we don't get along with each other. It's not what I expected. So we're going to lead parallel lives. Walk side by side. Right? You'll know what I want. We'll make sure to take care of what we need to do, bottom line, for each other. I'll send my malach in front of you. My malach, which will tell you, which we've defined in other contexts. What's my malach? My malach is my Ratzon Hashem. I'll tell you what I want. It'll come to you. And we'll walk and lead parallel lives. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no. I don't care how bad things get in the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. I don't care how bad things can get in a relationship. That's not good enough. And if all you're going to leave me with is let's lead these parallel lives, if all you're going to leave me with is you'll tell us what to do and we'll just go about and do it, but you're not going to be here with us, if you take away the goal of all of Sefer Shemot, the goal of all of Jewish history, which is to create a reality of intimacy between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael on every level, don't even bother taking us out. Then it ends here. If you're not going to sit with us and work this out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it ends here. And Moshe Rabbeinu was, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was clearly pushing Moshe Rabbeinu to bring that out. Because what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond? Vayomer, Panay Elecho v'anichot ilach. You're right, my panim will go with you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you got us to where we needed to get to. Where you begged me to see me for who I am, and you begged me as who I am to come with you as I am, and that we need to stay connected on that level. That's what a real marriage is about. Is to recognize, come to a full recognition to the best of our ability of who that person is. Now, what's deep down inside of every single person? What's the core of our being? And the Shama Lukut. Is that finite or infinite? Infinite depth. It goes on forever and ever and ever. It takes a lifetime to even begin to get to know what a person's really about. And we're always going to discover new things about the other person. That's the goal, is to keep digging deeper and deeper, and we find new things to adapt and change and work together to make that work. And it's not, it's always pitched as a negative, it's not a negative thing, it's a positive thing, it's the excitement of marriage. We talked about before also the concept that in a marriage, that just like the moon waxes and wanes, it gets bigger and smaller, there's a cycle to the month of the moon, that the Jewish marriage is built in that same way. Why? Because we're built in the image of the moon, in the image of the Chodesh. There's always supposed to be Chidush and Chadash in a marriage. But that also means emotionally, it also means personally. It's only the physical is only the lowest level of being. But it's meant to mean that we're always finding new things in the other person and adapting and changing and growing and connecting in new ways, and it's exciting. That's what it's meant to be, that's what it's supposed to be. And the way that happens, and the goal of what that's meant to accomplish, and I know that we said this before, but I'm going to say it one more time to really, because this is, we've been keep on, again, foreshadowing. The goal of Torah is not to shock you at the end. The goal of it doesn't shock you at the end. The goal is that everything should come together. Is that then the goal of what Sefer Shemot is out to produce is exactly that what it produces at the end. It produces a Mishkan, what we keep on defining as a Bayit Ne'eman B'Yisrael. That's what a Bayit Ne'eman B'Yisrael is about. That's what it means to create a Bayit, where there are deeper and deeper chambers within that home. You know, we kid around, you know, in our house basically is a social hall, right? Students are coming in and out all the time. You can have 100 students there at a time. My bayit is supposed to be private. So Shoshana and I talked about this before. The main floor of the house, that belongs to JLIC. That belongs to the public. The top floor is our home. And students don't go to the top floor. A lot of other reasons not to make sure that doesn't happen, meaning because of the sickness of our generation, meaning you want to make sure that you're always clear in terms of what the lines are in a person's home. But that's because there are distortions in a home in Bisman Hazeh. We said the bottom floor belongs to JLIC in our heads, as we've defined it as, it belongs to JLIC. And our home is the top floor. And students don't come upstairs to the top floor. Friends don't come upstairs to the top floor. Maybe our family comes upstairs to the top floor. But whenever anybody comes up to the top floor, which is our home, which is our bayit, we make sure to go upstairs first. It doesn't matter what's in there. What's in there is irrelevant. The first thing we do is we close the door to the bedroom. Because that's a space that doesn't belong to, it doesn't even belong to our parents. It doesn't belong to our family. It doesn't belong to anybody else. That space, everything gets deeper and deeper chambers. The upstairs only belongs to the Charno family. And once you go into the bedroom, that belongs to the couple alone. Nobody else goes in there. It doesn't belong to anybody else. Deeper and deeper chambers inside of a home. Deeper and deeper chambers inside of a person. And when we talked at the end of the winter Midrash, I said I'm going to like get a little bit more personal than I normally get. Because also there are things that I don't share with anyone. Sorry, there are things that I share with the whole world. I'm on recording. There are things that I share with the whole world. There are things that I share with certain groups of people. There are things that I share with my family. And there are certain things emotionally, spiritually, psychologically that I don't want to share with my wife. My Kodesh HaKodeshim? That belongs to one person and one person alone. That's the transition from public to private, to having a relationship of kavod, to kvod Hashem maleyat mishkan. If you want to create that bayit Ne'eman B'Yisrael, if you want to create that mishkan, and if you want ultimately the goal is not just for the husband and the wife to create a space of purity within the context of their home, Who's the third in the third being who's part of what that's about? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the third person in that relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what puts himself in between, in the reality between those two people. He's what binds them together. That's what it's meant to be. And so what do we do at the end of Sefer Shemot? At the end of Sefer Shemot, we reach our culmination. Listen to the way the Pesukim produce themselves. The last pasuk of Sefer Shemot, and this is where it's all been building towards. Ki anan Hashem al ha-mishkan. The Kvod Hashem is inside of the Mishkan now. We've achieved that purpose. And so therefore, the Anan Hashem has to rest on that Mishkan, which shows the whole world that we have successfully achieved the proper relationship of intimacy with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, as Moshe Rabbeinu himself even said, to the exclusion of all other nations, where they can see from the outside the Ananei HaKavod, but they don't know what's happening inside of that camp. They don't know what's happening inside of the Ananei HaKavod. And even Bnei Israel, who are inside of the Ananei HaKavod, they don't know what's happening inside of the Anan that's surrounding the Mishkan. Layers within layers within layers. But that Anan comes down and creates a reality because there's a reality of privacy. Because there's a reality of privacy is only a means to an end. Because there's a reality of true intimacy, closeness, love, connectivity, dedication, emunah, as we've defined it in previous shirim. Of true faithfulness from one to another, where there's two kruvim looking at the center of the Mishkan, one into another, gazing in each other's eyes. There's two things that stand in the center and two things alone. We get to that reality of Mishkan. Yomam ve'ish shelai labo le'enei kol Beit Yisrael. We finally achieve of what it means to have a Beit Yisrael, of what a bayit is meant to be. We now understand also where all of our batim are supposed to be, because we watch the ultimate bayit, the Mishkan, sitting right there. We're living inside of one area of clouds, which inside of it is another area of clouds, and we understand who we are and how we're meant to live and how each one is meant to be distinguished from one another. And that even becomes the praise that Bilam HaRasha gives us when he sees us, that makes us so unique. Matovo alecha Yaakov, mishenotecha Yisrael. That one door of one house never faced the other door of another tent, never faced the door of another tent. That we have a concept that everything that stays inside is meant to be inside, is meant to be personal and private in the way. That's what creates a real relationship of intimacy that we're meant to produce in this world as Klal Yisrael with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it's all about. But Moshe Rabbeinu understands that this journey is meant to be a journey, and that it's going to take us a long time till we get to our ultimate destination, till we get to Beit HaMikdash, to a bayit that's kadosh. The Mishkan is the foundation for Beit HaMikdash. It's temporary. Parentheses, it never gets destroyed. We'll talk about that in a later shiur in one of the later chumashim. It never gets destroyed, but it's the prototype for what the Beit HaMikdash is supposed to be. But it's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shochein with us as we go along and in the journey to achieve our ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to achieve Beit HaMikdash, a bayit that's kadosh. And so then it ends with exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu begged HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that we just read. Le'enei kol Beit Yisrael, with their eyes they see what a true bayit is meant to be, a true relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supposed to be, and internalize that that's what they're meant to keep with them. In what context? B'chol ma'asehem. Sefer Shemot, it defines the destination, but it also defines the entirety of the journey to that destination. Sefer Shemot's not the end of Chumash. Sefer Shemot's not the end of the story. Sefer Shemot produces a Mishkan, which was the goal of Sefer Shemot, which is why it's the book of getting there and to a destination. But even bigger than that, it defines the journey to getting to the destination. What we're building toward when we get past everything in Sefer Shemot. What's the content of everything that we're supposed to do for the rest of Jewish history until we reach its goal, until we reach the final building of the Beit HaMikdash? Is to keep building toward more and more and more, greater and greater and greater levels of intimacy and closeness with the Kadosh Baruch Hu as Beit Yisrael with the image of the Mishkan. That's the journey of Jewish history. And as we talked about before, that's the other pasuk. V'shachanti b'tocham, b'leiv kol achad b'achad, build a Mishkan in every single one of you. That for every single one of us in our personal relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that we're constantly meant over the course of a whole lifetime to build and build and build and build, to deeper and deeper and deeper chambers, to make those kruvim more and more and more real for us. To live a reality of Beit Yisrael. To live that reality in a whole different way. And in the same way that another person is infinite, and that the reason why we have a lifetime to spend with a spouse, is because we're meant, if it were just get married, build a house, then when you build a house, like, oh, this is it. Then the story should stop there also. Meaning, you still could pretend, you know, roll curtain, everything is totally fine. You could end the story there also in the sense that, so we've built our bayit, and we have it, and we have beautiful, you know, from pictures on the walls, and or a verbeim, or a psukim, or whatever you want, and we have special spaces, and there's a big sign over the door that says, no one in except for the couple, and nobody should really do that, it's kind of weird. And I was like, no, we build it all, you set it all up, and it's like, good, we're done. It's not we're done. That's the whole point, is that it takes an entire lifetime to see that other person get deeper and deeper and deeper into a recognition of two things. More and more of what their essence is, and that person is infinite and you will never get to the end of their essence, and that the journey of life will always be getting to reach your deeper and deeper and deeper levels of connectivity as you get to know them more and draw closer and closer together. Kal vachomer ben benoshel kal vachomer, with the macrocosm, what that's supposed to be with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. To recognize that he's the me, that we can feel more and more and more of his presence in this world, and we can come to greater and greater recognitions of the fact that we will never know his essence and how incredible his essence is, that it's so far beyond us. The lifetime of a Jew is developing their relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, where they're bringing the Kadosh Baruch Hu so much more into their life that they recognize there's nothing that I want to do more than get to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to study a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, study that marriage contract, study that thing that connects us, because I want to give to you more and more and more. I want to understand who you are. That was our shir in Parsha Yitro. I want to understand who you are more, because the more I understand about you in your infinite depth, in your infinite Torah, the more I can give to you the whole new things. Every time I open up a Sefer, the more I'm learning about you things I didn't even know. I didn't know you loved it when I do that. I didn't know you wanted me to do that. I didn't know that that's the way you wanted me. Now that I know I want to do that for you, I want to change the whole way that I live my life, just to make sure to be able to do that for you. Deeper and deeper levels of building up my Mishkan inside. Deeper and deeper levels of building connectivity with the Kadosh Baruch Hu inside. Through the entire journey of life. Through the entire journey of life, till I reach a level of not just Mishkan, but eventually reach Beit HaMikdash. And that in the other Midrash is the final chord of that Midrash. That's the final chord of that Midrash. Hopefully I can find it. Oh. After it talks about Tzarich ledaber imam eyem edaber imam mitoch hamishkan, so I left out the last line. The last line is, says a little bit of sometimes, a little bit of a punch at the end. Aselo hamelech shlomo, hamelech shashalom shalo. Meaning, there were many different variations on the Midrash. I can't find the exact words. So, he brings up Shlomo there, and trust me that it's in the Midrash. I can't find the exact words now. He says, and then comes Shlomo HaMelech, then comes Shlomo HaMelech, and then he builds Beit HaMikdash, which is the final chord of what everything is out there to set out. That's when the moon reaches its fullest height. That's 15 generations in. That's when we get to the ultimate destination. That's Beit HaMikdash. But that's what we're set out to achieve. But Sefer Shmot defines for us, it defines the goal, but doesn't reach the goal. It defines the goal, and therefore is able to define the journey, and ends Bechol Masehem. Zerat Hashem, we should be able to journey with HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout our entire lives, to keep getting to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper ways, understand what he's about, recognize the Kavod of Hashem, Melo Kol Ha'aretz Kavodo, to just contemplate even that for a second, the fact that we're living in Melo Kol Ha'aretz Kavodo, and what does that mean, and how do I understand that, and how do I interpret that, and how do I internalize that, that we're living in a reality kazeh. And to build up inside of ourselves the Mishkan Ma'at that's inside of each one of us, the Mikdash Ma'at that's inside of each one of us, and to build closer and closer relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the journey of life, to get to our conclusion, to get to our goal of living with a Kadosh Baruch Hu and standing there and really understanding to the best of our ability who He is, and letting Him know who we are as an Oved HaRavedet Hashem, and through that be able to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu Mamash Panim B'Panim at the end of days. Through what we've built up in terms of seeing Him here already in this world to the best of our ability, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu face to face mamash in the end of days. Mehirav Yamin.